You probably think that you know of every big time radio and TV star in America. Oh, wrong again. Here comes the Colonel.
yeah, right. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, energy, open innovation, defense. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Our big story today, of course, is the EPA going around Congress and instituting its own cap-and-trade measures on carbon emissions. And we're going to understand what the Congress might be doing about it, and so far the coal industry. And, of course, at the end of the program, Mr. Comments and the Voice of Reason. Right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set to answer today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, oh, spirit of the fountain, we have a real stumper this time. What North American creature is the world's largest land carnivore? Now, we've got to think about that for just a minute. The world's largest land carnivore is in North America. What creature is it?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell.
Well, once again, we get the insight from the spirit of the fountain. The world's largest land carnivore is located in North America, and it is the Kodiak bear. The Kodiak bear. Okay, before we get back into our program, you know, there's no commercials. You don't hear any commercials in this program. Now, I realize some of the radio stations who pick it up will play commercials at the break, you know, like at the half an hour or at the end of the show or the beginning or something. They're called adjacencies. But there are no commercials in the body of the program. So, you know, every once in a while, people ask us why, and it's because they're so god-awful. Have you heard the recent commercial for that asthma control medicine called Simicor?
Simicor contains formoterol.
Now, wait a minute. Did he say that Simicor contained Ford motor oil?
Medicines like formoterol increase the risk of death from asthma problems.
He did. Did you hear him? He said Simicor contains Ford motor oil.
Simicor contains formoterol.
Oh, no wonder it can make you sick. Oh, flush him out of here. All right, back to our program. What is the National Mining Association and Congress going to do about EPA abuses? Well, we'll start with Luke Popovich. Last time you and I spoke, we had taken note of the devastating things that are going on in Europe with cap and trade. And we had noted that it wasn't, you and I both figured, that it probably wasn't going to pass the Senate. And, of course, it hasn't. So we don't have it in this country. Now, what's the position of the NMA, the National Mining Association, on the EPA going around Congress and initiating this cap-and-trade policies on their own?
Well, you're quite right. This is the... this is, what, at least 10 years where Congress has refused to pass a law that would reduce these emissions for the very good reason that the cost of doing so is prohibitive for a country like ours that relies so much on coal-based power generation. And it's interesting that in the international arena, first in Copenhagen, if you'll remember a year ago, mm-hmm. and just recently in Cancun,
oh, yeah.
when the international community tried repeatedly to agree to reductions in these greenhouse gas emissions, they too failed, and they failed for the same reason. The developing countries simply cannot afford to forego affordable energy in order to please Greens and others who feel that they should sacrifice in order to generate carbon-free energy. That's simply not on the cards for countries that have to grow in order to provide jobs for millions of people that now don't have them, provide electricity for cities that are being built at a rapid pace. That's not realistic. So NMA's view is, if we're going to use coal anyway around the world, and we certainly seem that we're going to, then let's make it cleaner to use. And we can do that if we concentrate on the technology that we need to make coal cleaner, instead of concentrating on going to court and with regulators and trying to shut coal-based generation down. It's not going to help American consumers, that's for sure. And it's not going to be agreeable to China and India and other fast-growing countries in Asia that have insisted they will continue to burn the most affordable fuel they can. So if that's the case, then again, let's make it cleaner to use. Now, to your question, EPA circumventing the will of Congress that has been fairly plainly stated, EPA claims that it has the authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gases where Congress has refused to go. And the Supreme Court has agreed that there is the basis for regulation, provided EPA found that there was a threat. Well, EPA, of course, did find there was a threat from greenhouse gases. That is what is being challenged in the courts right now. And it's also being challenged in Congress, because we are now going to see renewed attempts to either force EPA to delay these regulations until we can get a better sense of their costs, or strip EPA entirely of the authority, as some members of Congress want to do. Certainly, we believe we need a timeout, that EPA simply can't pursue this course without further study and analysis.
Well, of course, the state of Texas is suing the EPA because the state of Texas just had their permits for power plants seized by authority of the Environmental Protection Agency. And a scary thing that I learned the other day is the agents of the Environmental Protection Agency are armed. They carry guns, and I guess since you and I both emit CO2 when we breathe out, that I guess if we breathe too much, we could be under the threat of some EPA agent. You know, really.
We're emission sources here that we better be careful. Well, part of the interesting thing that's going on here is that EPA realized over a year ago when it decided to regulate greenhouse gases that it would be politically unacceptable to go after all the sources of greenhouse gases, because that would include your corner dry cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they decided on their own, quite arbitrarily, since there's no authority for this in the law, they decided they would only apply their rule to large sources in order to avoid creating a political firestorm by going after every source of carbon emissions, greenhouse gas and methane emissions in the country. So that is what's partly being challenged in court now, and of course it's being challenged by the Greens, because they don't find it acceptable that EPA is making these exceptions for all these emissions. But the fact of the matter is, if you are going to regulate carbon emissions, then you are talking about an enormous regulatory apparatus over vast stretches of the American economy, simply because, as everyone knows, we are essentially a fossil fuel-based economy. It runs on gas, it runs on coal, it runs on oil, and they are all greenhouse gas-emitting fuels. So if you're going to try to force people to switch to cleaner fuels, you do that, of course, by raising the cost of those fuels. That's essentially what was behind the cap-and-trade plan that failed in Congress. Well, people don't want to pay higher costs. They would rather find solutions like through technology and through greater energy efficiency that can reduce these emissions gradually without creating an economic crisis. So that's where we are today. I think there are people who want to reduce emissions through technology and through greater efficiency gains, and there are those opposed to them who find that's not enough. They want more dramatic reductions, and cost be damned.
Well, of course, we are told that China is building one new coal-fired electrical plant a day, And if China is going to be, doing this, it seems totally unfeasible for us to be throwing coal out the back door and paying higher prices for other energy sources. And the other thing that has come up in this program on several occasions is the move now to electric cars. People don't realize that we're moving to electric cars, but where are we going to power those electric cars? It's going to be from coal-fired power plants, I think, right?
Sure, exactly right. If you take your example of China, China is the, in about 4 years ago, China stopped becoming a net exporter of coal and became a net importer of coal. It is using more coal than any other country in the world. It actually uses more coal than Japan, the entire European Union, and the United States combined. And that trajectory is only going to go up. Right now, coal generates about 65% of all of China's electricity. And because their electricity grid is expanding at a rapid rate, they will need more and more coal because that proportion of coal to their economy is not going to shrink. It's simply going to grow. So if you look at the number of cities that they are planning to build in the next 20 years, then if you look at what per capita automobile use will be as China grows its middle class, why, it's very, very obvious that they're going to need more fossil fuels. And of course, if they're investing in electric cars, there's got to be a fuel source to generate the electric power for those cars, just as there has to be here in the United States. So you're really looking at a greater market for coal-based power generation the more electric cars you put on the road. So there's the good news is there's enough energy in the world to furnish China and India and other growing countries with the fuel they need, and at the same time satisfy the demands of the developing world, but of the mature economies like our own. But the question is, can this be done in a way that brings down the environmental emissions in a way that still allows these economies to grow? And that's the fundamental, I think, dilemma that we have today. And it's going to take common sense rather than green ideology if we're going to satisfy the requirements of growing populations who obviously want a better life, as well as a cleaner environment.
So the best policy, facing the fact that we know that we don't want the lights to go out, that we're going to power all these electric cars, that China and India and other countries are going to continue to build these coal-fired power plants, and that we are dependent on coal, then the best policy would be to take our resources and technology and our energies there and not hurt the American economy, but to use our robust economy to develop clean coal. Isn't that basically the message we want to get across here?
Yes, it is. That is exactly the message. It not only does that make perfectly logical sense for the United States, it's in our self-interest as a nation to use rationally and responsibly use the fuel that we have in great abundance. We're the greatest. We have the greatest coal reserves in the world. It's the most affordable fuel demanded in the world. So why shouldn't we take the leadership role that we're accustomed to having and use the technological innovation that we are known for and develop the technologies to make coal cleaner, just as we've reduced other emissions from coal? There's no reason why we can't reduce CO2. And the other reason why this makes so much sense, as you alluded to, I think, earlier, is because even if we were to take coal off the table in the United States by regulation and simply make it completely unaffordable and illegal to use in our power plants, we would have enormously more expensive electricity, of course, but in doing that, we would do virtually nothing to reduce global emissions, because China and India and other developing countries are by far and away the greatest emitters. So all we would be doing by discouraging coal and other fossil fuels here in the United States is to give our trading competitors a cost advantage with letting them use cheaper energy, saddling us with more costly energy, and yet having a negligible effect on the global environment.
Yeah, so the whole thing seems to be pretty crazy. All right, well, the NMA, you guys are really active. What are your plans for 2011? Do you have some goals set that you can tell us about, or is that still being developed?
I think we'd like to help the new Congress conduct the kind of productive hearings that might get at some of these issues that you and I have discussed today. And I think that will be a significant change from the way Congress, the way the 111th Congress that just adjourned operated. We will try to change the debate toward the issues that we've talked about. How can we responsibly produce the energy that we have domestically here in the United States in great abundance? For example, you may have read China's recently decided it's not going to export the rare earth metals that they have virtually a corner on the market on. They have about 97% of these minerals that are essential for wind turbines. They're essential for a lot of green technologies around the world. They're essential for advanced weapon systems. China's decided it's not going to export them. And it's raised great concerns here in the United States because we no longer mine these minerals. We have them, but it's virtually impossible to mine them given the regulatory, the apparatus that we have to jump through and the long permitting process it requires. So this is an example of how a country like the United States has great resources of metals and fuel that it can use profitably and environmentally soundly, but we're prevented from using it. So these are some of the questions we'd like to bring to the table as Congress begins on January 5th. And I think also we'd like to encourage a more strategic way of thinking about how we use energy. Instead of having one part of our government maybe trying to encourage energy use, and then another part of our government with the regulators trying to stop us and raising the cost, let's see if we can't all drive in the same direction and realize that you not only have to have the talent, you have to have the infrastructure, you have to have the productive capabilities, but you also have to have the supply chain. You have to have an entirely integrated system in order to be efficient and to bring your resources to market to help your people. And that's the kind of comprehensive thinking we'd like to encourage. And I think it would benefit everybody. There's no reason why we can't be more self-reliant on our own energy resources. We have them in abundance. No reason we can't be more reliant on our own metals instead of having to import them from China. It simply takes common sense.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Luke, and I really must tell you how much we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and I hope as you progress through the coming year in these things that you'll give us a heads up and let us know what's going on, because we'd like to have you back.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks again, and Happy New Year to everyone.
So with that, we need to turn again to the lawmaker, Congressman Michael Burgess. All right, so this leads then to the big question. Will there be enough clout in the House of Representatives when Congress reconvenes to revisit the Clean Air Act and maybe do some amendments or something like that? And would you propose anything like that?
Well, I think that will come from a variety of directions, and certainly a direct amendment of the Clean Air Act is something that would come through my committee and my subcommittees, and yes, we're studying that right now. The more quick, if you will, fix to this is through the funding. Now, something happened right at the end of the year. A lot of bad stuff happened in the lame duck Congress, but something bad didn't happen, and that was the Congress did not pass this large omnibus bill, this big spending bill that the president had wanted. And that's a good thing, because come March, the government runs out of money, and it is in that new spending bill that will now be largely constructed by a Republican House, a Republican Budget Committee, a Republican Appropriations Committee. It is that new spending bill where many of these things that are happening at the federal agency level outside the legislative branch, this is where they can be controlled, because the money just simply will not be there to enact perhaps the carbon endangerment findings that the EPA is wanting to put forward. So it is the ability to control funding that the House of Representatives has, and that's really going to be our main tool to use.
All right, so the first thing to cut off funds for EPA action and things that may be considered reckless as far as the economy goes. And then the other step from then would be to go and revisit the Act itself and maybe do some amendments and that sort of thing. Is that what we're saying in summary here?
Yes, but bear in mind, changing and amending the Act is a much bigger hurdle to cross. Remember, the prohibition on offshore drilling that went on for years was because of a continued amendment that was in an appropriations bill that came up every year. So you can do a lot with just simply controlling the funding at the appropriations process. And again, I think the smart money would say that's where the immediate action is going to be. Well, I'm on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Healthcare is one of our subcommittees, and I'm actually vice chair of that subcommittee. EPA, of course, the regulation of EPA comes under the Energy Subcommittee. I'm on that subcommittee, and also the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee, where I'll play a major role next year. So there's lots of chance for interaction with the EPA at the committee and subcommittee level. And then, lastly, I'm on the Energy Committee again, which does have jurisdiction over the EPA. We also, through our committee, have jurisdiction over the FDA and National Institute of Health and a variety of other federal agencies. So it's a pretty active committee and pretty active subcommittees. And then I'm also on the Joint Economic Committee, which is obviously these things, as they affect the economy, will be pretty significant as well. So we'll have some hearings on the economic side of things on through Joint Economic as well. That's a House-Senate committee that, since we've got a divided, Republican House and Democratic Senate, that committee actually ought to have a lot of fireworks because we won't agree on very much. The long-term outlook is we've got to come to some understanding with the EPA about what their rights and duties are under the Clean Air Act, and I don't think that this is one of them.
Well, Congressman Michael Burgess, you've been very forthcoming and candid. I appreciate it very, very much, you taking time from your busy holiday season to be with us, and we appreciate your comments extremely. Thank you so much.
Sure enough, Colonel. Anytime.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Find something that you have a passion for, and find something that you feel confident you can be good at, and go for it. And don't be afraid to work 90-hour weeks, and don't be afraid to take risks, and believe in yourself. And that's if you do that, things will, to one degree or another, tend to work out. I've certainly made several mistakes over the years, and my own personal belief is that the worst decision or the worst mistake is the one that you repeat, because if you learn from your mistakes, more often than not, things will go the right way. There are times when making a certain mistake can be fatal, and it's just that you, in addition to working hard and being capable, you do need to get some breaks. I'm Mark Shear. I'm president of CG Power Solutions.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.